be. Macklin for Courier on this frigidly cold Wednesday night. Man, does it... We had basically no winter last year, right, Brent? So it doesn't take long to remind us where we live.
Once the Jets came back, there was no winter. No. I think the Chipmans did it.
I think you could be right. And what a summer, too. Brent Bellamy joins us in studio this evening, and he's going to be here. Well, we haven't decided how long Brent's going to stick around. That'll be up to you. That'll be up to him. That'll be up to me. And we're talking about Winnipeg because this is a city that... if you've read any of Brent's columns in the Winnipeg Free Press, he is passionate about where we live. And maybe let's just start about it. You're born and bred here?
Born in Brandon, but I'm a Winnipeg.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you were from Brandon.
I'm not really from Brandon. I was born there.
Okay. I'm just getting feedback just to talk a little closer in the mic so everybody can hear you at home. Whereabouts did you grow up then? Where were you born?
I'm an NK boy.
Okay. Okay. We spent some time in Brandon.
Yep.
And
live in River Heights now.
Okay. Well, you know what? The bottom line is the passion about Winnipeg comes through in your articles. And your latest one, that was just on the 14th. That was on Monday. With regards to the Capion Barracks site, and we'll get into that conversation later. You work for a number 10 architectural group. What buildings have you been involved? What projects would people recognize that have your stamp on them, so to speak?
I would say the latest building is the family center, the Qualico Family Center at Assiniboine Park.
Oh, beautiful spot.
On there. Yeah, it turned out to be a great building. It was a great client, and, you know, working in the park was a fun summer, that's for sure.
It's going to be interesting to see how the park evolves over the next few years. They're so far down the road, yet the most spectacular things really are yet to come.
Once the zoo opens, it's going to blow people's minds. Like, number 10 is part of that design team, and we get to see the drawings before, and it's just going to be an amazing thing.
The Journey to Churchill exhibit?
Yeah, it's going to be incredible.
Yeah,
I think it'll be a great tourist attraction for the city.
I think that, and maybe you can back me up on this. I think we've been on the cusp for a long time in this community, but it feels to me like we're not necessarily ascending anymore. We're maybe just about to go over, and I'm not talking the fiscal cliff in a bad way, but I think we're about to really embrace and embark on something special in the community.
I totally agree. I mean, I think in the last 7-8 years, Winnipeg has really taken off. Even when my office is down in the Exchange District, and I remember when I started working there, I would park under the canopy of the pumping station. You know, everything was derelict along the rail line there, and now it's a beautiful park. There's condominium buildings everywhere. There's, you know, new retail happening, restaurants everywhere. I used to sit in Old Market Square by myself eating lunch thinking, where is everybody? And now you can't even find a spot to have lunch.
You know, and that's just the way it ought to be, right? People are rediscovering, not only in Winnipeg, but across North America, rediscovering their downtowns.
No, it's true, yeah. And I think Winnipeg... You know, I remember as a kid going down, taking the bus down to Portage Avenue and walking from the Beta Eanes. Like, I sound like I'm 70 years old, but that wasn't that long ago.
No, you and I were probably bumped into each other a couple times unknowingly.
It was a really tough time. And even 5-6 years ago, how many empty storefronts were there? And I remember the Clifford's fur store there was empty for so long.
Yes.
It was just, you know, ripped my heart out. And now there's practically not an empty storefront on Portage Avenue. I mean, we still have challenges, obviously, but, you know, things are really happening. And I think once things like the Human Rights Museum and the Convention Center and a lot of these new residential buildings start opening up, it's really going to sort of be the tipping point for downtown.
Well, the tipping point is, of course, people, right, Brent? And obviously the NHL returning as wonderful an influx of people that the Moose created 40 times a year. It was anywhere from 6,000 to 7,000 to 8,000, sometimes larger crowds, but that was kind of the average crowd. Now when you've got 15,000 people and they're all in a good mood, they're clamoring to spend their money, and it's just a completely different feeling.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, wanting to spend the money is the key part there. I mean, it seems like since they've arrived, there's nothing but restaurants opening up there, the new shed development that's happening. I think in a few years there, we're really going to see the impact. Once the MPI lots, the big parking lot across from Tavern United and the MTS Center, once that gets developed, there's and even across Portage Avenue, the new hotel that's happening there, and that whole big development there.
New condo development, yeah. Really, and we know there's another big condo development coming to downtown that's still under wraps, but that's going to be a very exciting project. I'm close to someone who's, you know, very close to that project, yeah. and I keep, you know, when are you going to give me some info? And yeah. he's very tight-lipped on it, but all he promises me that it's going to be something that Winnipeggers haven't seen before, and isn't that something that is typically Winnipeg? We want to see it proven somewhere else first.
Yeah, it's true. That's what we do. But, you know, I think...
It was never like that, though. That's not how we started, right?
It's true.
When you talk about the aqueduct, you talk about the James Avenue pumping station, yeah. you talk about the floodway, these were all engineering firsts in a lot of cases that Winnipeggers came up with. We talk about Made in Manitoba solutions. Man, some of the greatest things we've done as a community... The ideas were born here, yeah. proven here, and exported.
One of the things I always like to sort of push to people from outside of Winnipeg is that Winnipeg was home to Canada's first skyscraper. The Union Tower, the old Royal Bank on Main Street, which was empty for the last 15 years, was the first skyscraper in Canada. Not Western Canada, not the highest flagpole like they celebrate. It was the absolute first skyscraper in the country.
And that's based on it being a steel frame structure, is that correct?
First, it brought incredible innovation and was really the first world-class thing to happen in Winnipeg. And I think the fact that it's being reborn now with Red River College sort of is a symbol of, you know, the next stage of Winnipeg's development.
Now we often talk about, you talk about the Exchange District quite a bit in your articles, and I don't think it's a surprise to a lot of people, but it may be to some that it's by accident that those buildings still stand, right? It was yeah. really that economic depression and recession that Winnipeg was in the 1970s. They weren't clamoring to bulldoze those buildings to put more towers next to the Richardson building, next to the what we grew up knowing as the Trizac building. It was really an economic downturn that saved those turn-of-the-century buildings.
Yeah, we're not geniuses by any means. The reason those buildings exist is because... You know, in 1914, we peaked. It's tough for a city to peak 80 wow. years ago or whatever that was, 100 years ago now. And, you know, there was no development pressure for them. In other cities, you know, Calgary had that same type of, not quite, but that same type of neighborhood. But, you know, there was pressure to develop it, and there was no ethic to save it. Now we're sort of at the precipice. Like, we're getting that pressure to develop the Exchange District. And we have to decide as a community, do we save them? Like, what's our goal for that neighborhood? Because we've never had to answer the question. We've never been asked the question, do we care about our heritage buildings? And we're finally being forced to ask ourselves what we believe as a community should happen in those neighborhoods.
Architect Brent Bellamy with us in studio. Brent, so I'm going to ask you, what is that balance? Because it all comes down to balance. It can't be all one thing and all another. Are we finding that balance, in your opinion? We've seen some pretty modern development along Waterfront Drive. To me, that is the ideal example of the way government is supposed to work. We're going to build a $9 million road, and away you go, private sector. And that's was really the birth of condominiums, brand new ones anyway, in downtown Winnipeg, was the city saying, we're going to build a road and open up the waterfront to the people. Are we striking that balance of new and old?
Yeah, I think we're doing okay there. I agree with you that it was an amazing thing when Waterfront Drive was built. No one had the idea that this incredible neighborhood could be a residential neighborhood. Every other city discovered that 50 years ago, but we didn't. And all it took was really the mayor saying, how about here? Why not develop here? And everyone did. And it's really been an incredible catalyst. There's hundreds and hundreds of units being developed now, and there's hundreds have already been developed. And I think, you know, the new and the old argument, it doesn't bother me personally so much to inject some new architecture in there. What drives me insane is demolishing buildings for the sake of parking or empty lots or not wanting to pay the property. I don't want to pay the property taxes on my building. If I demolish it, I don't have to do that. You know, that's just not, we shouldn't be allowed to do that in that special neighborhood. It's a National Heritage Site. There's no way we should be able to tear down these buildings that have stood for 130 years without a plan, like the Shanghai building, which is, you know, I love the 141C there, but the building itself was an, you know, was an important piece of Winnipeg's history, and we've lost it for no reason. And there's several other examples of that.
And I think that's important that we keep telling those stories, we keep talking about it, and reminding people. And for a community that, in my opinion, always needs this outside validation, we've received that validation. That stamp of approval's come from Ottawa. It's come from people who know better. They've said, this is a treasure. Treat it gently. Be mindful of the resource. And from time to time, I think we lose sight of that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think I often get criticized for loving old buildings too much, or, you know, those, like I'm some kind of, a hippie, communist or something. And it is ironic that I write in the business section of the Free Press, because, you know, every stock I've ever bought has gone to zero. Like, I'm so not a business guy.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you when I buy. Is it on your list, Brent? I won't buy that one.
Don't do it. But it's made me think about the economic impact of all these things, not just the, I love old buildings, and, there's urban arguments for everything, but there's economic arguments for all these things too. And it's not a fluke that in the Exchange District, most of the private development in downtown has been in the Exchange District. It's not it's the urban quality that people seek. Maybe they're not even realizing that why it's attractive to build there. But, it's not just that I want to save old buildings. I believe that it's a catalyst for the future of the city. That's the piece that we can grow from and spread throughout the whole downtown.
And that's where we started, so many years ago, back in the 1870s. That's where we started, and it only makes sense that we kind of start there again.
Yeah.
Why don't we take a break? We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Brent Bellamy. And when we come back, Brent, I'm going to ask you about something that you said in your last article that I couldn't agree with more. No, I couldn't agree with it more with regard to our vistas and our lack thereof. And we're kind of responsible for them. They've all got to be man-made. So we'll come back. More conversation with Brent Bellamy right here on The Nighthawk.
The Nighthawk with guest host Greg Mackling will be right back. This is 680 CJOB.
Experience MBCI.
Hi, I'm Andrea Dix, student.
With guest host Greg Mackling on 680 CJOB.
Welcome back to the Nighthawk. We're talking about the great city of Winnipeg and some of the things that we need to do and be mindful of it as we are on this precipice of some big things in our community, and the NHL returning was just kind of the icing on the cake. So many things that so many people said would never happen. We built a new airport terminal. IKEA came to town, and people poo-poo that in some circles, but that really is a mark that we've arrived in terms of, once again, other people's perception of our community, right, Brent?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, IKEA, it's just a big blue store, but really, sure. That's a big thing. Like, there are markers that cities use to say that they're here, and IKEA is one of them. And a big new airport is another one. It's true.
I have 6-year-old twin boys, so I measure them every 6 months, on the wall, right?
Yeah.
And so you've got those threshold things and the new football stadium. The only thing I lament, Brent, could you imagine those arches somewhere on the skyline in downtown?
Yeah.
I think it would have been spectacular to see that stadium in Point Douglas or somewhere similar.
I actually thought the best spot for that was the Canada Packers site.
Okay.
Like, it was really central. I mean, I agree. I think it looks like a nice stadium and it's nice to have it, but I think being at the university is going to be a challenge for everyone. And there were more central locations, and the Canada Packers one, it was sort of proposed at one time, but I think that would have been a really good spot.
Now, you spoke about lost opportunities in your last article in terms of doing things right. And I got to tell you, the one that frustrates me the most is Waverly West, where this was supposed to be, houses. Everybody was going to have geothermal heating, and we're going to have these pedestrian flyovers over Keniston to get to the town square. And later in the program, I want to ask you about the redevelopment of shopping centers throughout the United States, where they're bulldozing traditional shopping centers and building town squares that reflect and resemble the Exchange District, in suburbia and Atlanta and Dallas and these big major U.S. cities. And you talked about lost opportunities. When you look at the Kapyong Barracks site, and let's take the political side of it out, when you see that geographic location, What can you imagine there?
You know, I wrote that article. Right now, everyone is talking about the politics, and, you know, everyone's terrified of what an urban reserve can be, or, you know, everyone has their worst fears. And I wrote that article just to start the discussion of what it really could be. And it's one of the most important pieces of land in our city. Like, it's wedged between two incredible neighborhoods, and it's really the first major opportunity to show what a modern residential neighborhood could be. Not one that's sprawling, like Waverly West, you mentioned. It could have had a town center, but it still was way out on the perimeter. Like, it will never be the new Osborne Village, because people will never work there. They won't. People will live there. It's always a drive-in kind of neighborhood. And this one has an opportunity to really be an urban infill and to demonstrate what urban infill can do for a city. You know, it's an easy concept to understand. Like, we complain about this 4% property tax increase, but to me, it's kind of like cutting your arm over and over and then complaining that you're spending too much on Band-Aids. You know, urban sprawl is really killing our city, and it's becoming unsustainable. And by doing urban infill, we're demonstrating how to become a sustainable city. You know, if you think of, it's an easy concept, if you think of 100 houses in one square mile, all paying 100 property taxes to sustain all the infrastructure in that 1 mile, and if all of a sudden there's only 50 houses in that one square mile, that's half the amount of tax money that's maintaining the exact same services, you know, sewers, roads, snow clearing, garbage, all of that.
And not to mention that those neighborhoods, those densely packed neighborhoods that you're talking about, are closer to downtown. So the pressure to build infrastructure for vehicles and for transit, maybe the pressure is there, but you've got to build a shorter road or a shorter rail line or a shorter transit way.
Yeah, and you think about the kids in that neighborhood in Waverly, or in Waverly West, they need to either be bused to schools in other parts of the city, or they build new schools. In the Capion Barracks site, those kids will go to the dozens and dozens of schools that are in River Heights. You know, there's so many schools in that area that they'll just plug right into, and it goes for all the infrastructure.
Well, Garrison Woods in Calgary is often held up as the example of how to do it. And when I lived in Calgary, I considered buying a home in there, and it was reluctantly at first. I redeveloped because I thought of growing up in Winnipeg and Keniston Boulevard, and I don't really want to live in the old Army Barracks area. Right. But when you go to Garrison Woods, it's a place you can live, you can play, and you can work. You don't even really ever have to leave there.
Yeah. And you think of River Heights, it's that kind of neighborhood. And we could recreate that quite easily in a modern way, you know, very sustainable, energy efficient, all of that.
We'll take a break and come back. More of the Nighthawk. Brent Bellamy, architect extraordinaire, joining us in the studio tonight.
The Nighthawk with guest host Greg Mackling will be right back.
Time to invite you to stick around to the other side of information. Robert Holland's in with sports, news, and weather at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk more about Winnipeg, what a beautiful place it can be, all the things that are happening, all the things that could happen. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 780-6868, #680 on MTS Mobility, or 800-665-2202.
Order the 4XL Party Pack for your next party.
With guest host Greg Mackling on 680 CJLB.
Mackling for Courier on this, gotta make sure it's Wednesday. I think it is. Yeah, it's Wednesday. Hump Day. Great to be with you. Brent Bellamy has kindly taken some time to join us tonight. And Brent, I want to ask you about this idea of, you know, we go to Vancouver. I'm a Vancouver guy. I love Vancouver. Yeah. Always have. North Vancouver was like my backyard when I was a kid, because my grandparents lived up near on Lonsdale. And when the Lonsdale Quay was built and the Sea Bus and the SkyTrain, I went on SkyTrain the first day it opened at 14, 15 years old, running around Vancouver without a care. You talk about going downtown Winnipeg, right? We would get on the bus and your mom would say, just as long as you're home by 7 o'clock and you only bought 3 records at Sam's, you were okay. And, you know, Vancouver to me is, you know, it gets rated the most livable city in the world on a regular basis. I think it fell to 2 or 3 this year. Yeah. But outside of that traffic, and that's what, you know, I could never live there because of the traffic. Yeah. But you get into those neighborhoods of West Beaches and to Kitsilano, where I used to bug my friends that lived in Kitsilano who were from Saskatchewan and Manitoba and Alberta, and they would say, well, you know, I hated a small town. It's like, you live in a small town. Isn't that what it's all about now? It's living in a community where if you don't want to leave, you don't have to. You can do everything you need to do within your community.
Yeah, people don't really realize that. In the bigger cities, I've always maintained that. Everybody lives in their neighborhood. Like I said earlier, I'm an NK boy. I have friends that are Transcona boys. It doesn't matter if they live in Vancouver. They're Transcona boys.
That's true.
Everybody identifies. I will always be an NK boy.
Right.
No matter how long. I'll die in River Heights. I'll
be an NK boy. Same way. You got it, bro.
Everybody connects with their community. And even in big cities, that's the way it works. You know, the community is important.
So what we're talking about doing is redeveloping and building these little communities. And Capion Barracks is what we were talking about. But I bring up Vancouver because obviously God graced them with some pretty spectacular scenery.
Yeah.
We hope to never see it in Winnipeg because that means we've gone through some dramatic pole shifting or massive floods or earthquakes or something. But the bottom line, and we were talking off air, is that makes it more incumbent upon us for everything that we build to be beautiful in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Would you quash that?
You know, I'm a big believer that cities need to be places that people fall in love with. You know, I think that's a critical thing. And Winnipeg, for a long time, people weren't in love with Winnipeg. A lot of my friends moved to Vancouver. They moved to Toronto, even Calgary. Not for jobs or anything. Just because it's a place they could fall in love with. And Winnipeg didn't have that for a long time. People are starting to now. You know, you don't fall in love with Pembina Highway. You fall in love with Cordon Avenue.
Well, unless it's Monty's, but that's another story altogether. But yeah, you don't fall in love with Pembina Highway because that's could be in any major city in North America.
Exactly. But what you fall in love with is Cordon. People love Cordon Avenue. They love Osborne Village. They love, you know, certain things. And those are the things that we really have to foster and nurture and grow in our city because we don't have the mountains. You know, people love Vancouver because of that. You know, there's some neighborhoods, you know, you go to Surrey and Burnaby, and, you know, if I lived in Vancouver, it would be horrible to live there because that's worse than Winnipeg because you have the traffic and all that. You can't live in actual Vancouver.
Exactly.
But people are still in love with it because of, you know, because of the mountains and the seawall and all of those natural advantages that they have. So the question is, how do we make a city here that people can be in love with?
You know, you mentioned the seawall. You know, you can walk for, what is it, 32 miles or something. And here we are in Winnipeg. We've got this beautiful river walk that's underwater, you know, 3-4 months of the year quite often. I mean, that's a travesty.
It is. You know, I have a friend, though, who, I'm not sure if he actually worked on it, but he's a landscape architect in the city. And he said that that was built for the 1 in 10 year flood.
One in 10?
When it was built, yeah.
That's spectacular planning.
Well, even 1 in 10, but it seems like it's...
Yeah, well, we're obviously in a wet cycle right now,
exactly.
Or somebody would tell us that. Anyway, you know what? Lynn had a call. She's joining us on the Night Talk. Hi, Lynn. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Well, you wanted to chime in.
Yes. Just about Waverly West. Like, who is the developer there, and why did they not think of, like, you know, schools and that, and... you know, just stores around that area. Like, what were they thinking?
Well, I think
who is the developer that...
Well, I think, ironically enough, I think it's the province of Manitoba.
The province pushed that one, yeah. We can't really blame anybody else.
Yeah, you know, the province owned all that land, and... The province of Manitoba.
Oh? Yeah,
that's pretty
amazing.
Really?
Yep. So,
who was the developer that developed it, though?
I'm guessing it's the typical players who have influence and who want to see lots of new houses being built. So how frustrated are you, Lynn, when you see, you know, one thing is promised and another thing is delivered? That is awfully frustrating.
Well, you're looking at Fort Richmond and then you're going to Waverly West. Is not the same developer? That's not a province.
No, but the province
owns that land.
The province owned the land, and they're the ones that decided to open it up and to negotiate with the city to make it happen.
Okay, who developed the houses there. On
well, the, like I say, the your regular players, your Qualicos and all the big housing developers, those are the ones obviously building in there. But it was
right.
The,
but why didn't they think of a plan like, you know, for schools, you know, box stores, things that in Waverly West.
It's a great question, and it's one we're asking
right
now.
The Linden Woods, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got everything.
Lynn, thanks for your call. Appreciate your bringing that up. And, you know, people get frustrated, right? And because, you know, they don't know who to blame sometimes. Yeah. And so let's not blame anybody. Let's go back to where it really happens and to the downtown. And this idea of making things beautiful. You had a piece back at, I guess it was in December of last year, and some of the public art that's shown up at Portage in Maine. Is that the Richardsons investing in that art? Because
yeah,
it is. It's spectacular.
Amazing, yeah. But the thing that kills me, and talk about falling in love with your city, nobody can be in love with those concrete barricades at Portage in Maine. And these spectacular pieces of art, I guarantee 99% of Winnipeggers, if I showed them a picture of it, wouldn't know where that was, even though they're amazing pieces, because they're buried behind those concrete barricades. There's no pedestrian activity on that side of the building at all. You know, I think the opportunity is there. Hopefully one day they take those stupid things down and that becomes a real pedestrian intersection. And then that public art can really be celebrated.
If Manitoba is the heart of the continent and Winnipeg is the heart of Manitoba, Portage in Maine is the heart of Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And we've basically told people to go away, to go underground, to hibernate.
Yeah.
You know, from a functionality standpoint, when I was a kid, I thought, oh, this is really cool. But I didn't realize that you were never, ever going to be able to walk across Portage
Avenue.
It's
amazing. Our office is in the Exchange, on Bannatyne in the Exchange District, and I had some tourists walking down. It was Lombard, closer to the river, and they asked me how to get to a coffee shop. And I was trying to point them to a coffee shop that was on the other side of, on Portage Avenue, on the other side of Portage in Maine. And I had to walk them there because there was no way. I couldn't explain how to get across Portage in Maine.
And like so many things, it gets lost in translation. And maybe that's where we're at. If we're having, you know, Confusion Corner, it always makes me laugh because in no other city in the world would they go, well, we'll just call it Confusion Corner, and then we can say at least you were forewarned.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, we'll just put a crazy name on it, and we won't do anything about it.
At least
you mentioned that development just south of where the train tracks and now the southeast transit corridor or the first part of the first leg. Mm-hmm. I love people who call it the first leg of the rapid transit. That was never the intention for it to stop at Jubilee, but
yeah.
You know, you can buy whatever is being sold, I guess, on certain days. That development there, you know, just kitty corner to the Mulvey Market, you know, if you could open all that up as, you know, it doesn't have to be open public space, but public space where people are engaged, connected to the river. To talk about some of those lost opportunities.
There's so many of them. There was the discussion earlier this year by the Free Press, pushed by the Free Press, about the rail yards, the CP rail yards. There's lots of opportunities. Instead of growing further and further out, you know, my dream is that the city starts to look at growing inwards. And there are huge swaths of land everywhere, starting with the old rail yards, abandoned rail yards. I mentioned Canada Packers site. You know, even thinking about things like beginning to move the St. Boniface Industrial Park, which is 1 kilometer from downtown. It's so central. There's no reason to have an industrial park there. I mean, there was in 1890.
Right.
But why don't we start thinking for the future and start moving some of those things out, provide incentives to move that horrible mushroom factory from stinking up the entire neighborhood so that land becomes, you know, desirable for development.
You've got the Seine River, you've got the Red
yeah.
River, you've got a natural transportation corridor between Transcona and downtown.
Absolutely.
that's being bogged down by what's now unsuitable development.
Yeah.
We've got all sorts of land opening up to the north and the west and the Centerport development. Now with Center Point, you got to be careful. Center Port, you know, there's all sorts of reasons to move that industrial activity elsewhere. We're going to take a break. We'll come back This hour's flown by. Brent Bellamy's in studio. We're talking about Winnipeg. We're talking about making it more beautiful. How do we do that? It's Mackling for Courier on the Nighthawk.
To the Nighthawk with guest host Greg Mackling on 680 CJLB.
It's Mackling for Courier, and time has flown by with Brent Bellamy tonight. And Brent, I really want to get this out, this idea of, you know, you can do all the beautiful things you want, but, you know, lipstick on a pig, you know, it always looks like lipstick on a pig. And when you're going to, you know, if you're going to invest a couple $100,000 in marbles, those oversized marbles, which on their own are a fantastic addition to downtown Winnipeg, but when you put them on broken and uneven interlocking brick, it looks a little bush league.
But you know what it all comes back to for me is the sprawl in the city causing that we can't afford to fix those bricks downtown. Like, what are the things Winnipeggers complain about most? You know, taxes, potholes, and traffic. Maybe crime is another one. But all of those things are affected by urban sprawl and our ability to pay for the infrastructure that we have.
We should have paint, in my opinion, all the curbs in downtown should be painted in the summertime. Yeah, they should be crisp. And as soon as that last snowfall comes down, everything from the light poles, yeah, you know, down to the curbs should be looking like $1 million because we don't have the mountains to look at. So what we have to look at is the infrastructure. It should be the cleanest downtown on the face of the earth. And we've got to wrap our heads around it. Maybe that it's worthy for it to be that way. I don't know what's going to convince people that has to be the priority.
You know, I think having more people living downtown and sort of
demanding that,
growing more pride in our city, I think that's what's going to...
Could you imagine if all of downtown looked like the legislative grounds?
Yeah. No, I agree. Or you go to Ottawa, and they have lots of federal money, but they're exactly what you say. Like, all their boulevards are manicured and they have flowers in all their pots.
Just enough time to ask you, is the legislative building one of the more perfect buildings ever designed or not?
It's a pretty cool building.
It's pretty good. And to me, it is the perfect building. I don't know if there's a more beautiful building on the planet. And of course, I'm biased, but there's just something about that building. Brent, thanks so much for taking the time, man. It was really great to get to know you. And keep up the good work and standing up for you know, what we can have. And let's not settle.
I agree totally.
We'll take a break. We'll wrap up hour two right after this.
With guest host Greg Mackling on 680 CJLB.
I hope my love for Winnipeg isn't too apparent on the program. I love where we live. I love our community. And, you know, I think we're capable of so many wonderful things. We've proven that over the last couple of decades. I really believe we're on the precipice of something magnificent in this community. As long as we're prepared not to settle, to not settle for the status quo. And our downtown, sometimes it feels like people talk about downtown like it's downtown Regina or downtown Saskatoon or downtown Minneapolis or Detroit. It's our downtown. It's our community. And if we abandon it, it will abandon us. And the bottom line is we need to get behind the projects that are going to bring people downtown to live, to play, to work, and to stay long-term, and it's got to be a beautiful place in order for people to do that long-term. We come back following information with Robert Hall, and we're going to California. We're going to visit with our friend Stephen Chase. We're going to talk.